Thank you for joining us today for the Whitaker Report podcast, a discussion with thought leaders about the future of economic development, site selection, and corporate real estate. My name is Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates, a data analytic company serving the needs of economic development and commercial real estate organizations. I will be your host as we endeavor to see what's next, to see around the corner. Today we will be speaking with Judy Scalise, founder and principal of ESI Corporation. ESI Corporation is a real estate economic development consulting firm and specializes in economic development, pre-development planning services to a clientele consisting of government agencies, corporations, and private developers, tribal communities, economic development organizations, and utility companies. Judy brings 30 years of professional expertise in the areas of strategic planning, market and feasibility analysis, economic and fiscal impact studies. A pioneer of economic development analytics with 30 years of established market expertise, Judy has authored more than 300 plans and economic studies. Peer recognition of Judy's portfolio of work comprises industry leader roles and notable distinctions, including past chairwoman and board member of the International Economic Development Council, past president and former board member, Arizona Association of Economic Development, honorary life member and fellow member of International Economic Development Council. Judy holds a Bachelor's of Science degree in Public Management and Policy from the University of Arizona and is the graduate of the Economic Development Institute at the University of Oklahoma. She achieved the professional designation of Certified Economic Developer. Please join me as we welcome Judy Scalise to the Whitaker Report podcast. Judy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dean. I certainly enjoy the conversations that we've always had with you over the years.
Could you please tell us a little bit about ESI Corporation? How did you get started in economic development and real estate development consulting?
So I began my career actually as an intern with the Regional Economic Development Commission. After graduating from the University of Arizona, I was hired by the State of Arizona Economic Development Office, initially to administer an EDA grant. But from there, I moved into the career of economic development. So, you know, after so many years of working as an economic development practitioner and ultimately as the head of the business recruitment and international trade program for the state, I moved into other aspects of economic development. I started my own company in 1990 in the midst of that real estate crisis. At that time, we conducted a lot of due diligence work for the Resolution Trust Corporation, the RTC, and ultimately began working and consulting with real estate development companies such as Del Webb Corporation and economic development organizations throughout the southwestern U.S. So our work with Del Webb was always very interesting. As an active adult community developer, they always had difficulty getting their entitlement process through the communities because there was always fear of, you know, seniors will vote down school bond issues. And so the work that we focused on was essentially looking at the economic and fiscal impact that those communities actually have on a community and, you know, help them through that entitlement process. So that's how I started.
Very interesting. So you have kind of a combination of economic development and real estate combined as you went about this career of yours. I noticed you've been a pioneer in economic analysis for a long time, and you've worked on a number, like over 300 economic plans and strategies and studies. What have you learned as you've gone through that process?
Well, you know, the fundamentals of economic development stay the same in terms of, you know, job creation, but it's the economics and the approach and your partners and financing and funding that have changed over the years based on the type of work that you're doing. You know, how you approach economic development is market-driven, and it's really based on what a community or a region has to work with. And so it's really important that you understand what your assets are and be able to leverage those, because the communities that do that are the ones that are the most successful. So when you think about what's happening in economic development today, there are a lot of economic developers and planners who get involved with helping with adaptive reuse projects. you know, vacant space today could become the next, you know, housing project tomorrow. There's a lot of repurposing of office buildings that are taking place. And so what does that require? Well, certainly, you know, zoning and building code reform. So economic developers can get involved in helping to facilitate that type of economic development at their local level. And, you know, when you think about growing the local workforce, you know, that could mean having affordable housing, having an affordable housing stock. And so, you know, working with, you know, finding, identifying, working with your local for-profit and nonprofit housing developers, you know, is really could be a critical component of your economic development outreach. You know, is there some city-owned land that can be used? And so you start thinking about how you can build up the workforce, and do you have the affordable housing for workforce, you know, to be able to live? And so when you think about markets that have to recruit workers in because they don't have the affordable housing, it puts you at a competitive disadvantage to those that do. And then lastly, when we talk about strategic planning, you know, you have to make sure that it fits your community. You have to have that local support, whether it's your local elected leaders, other city departments, and you have to make sure that you have the staff and the financial resources to execute the plan. And then use your partners, because it's not always, you know, it's a lonely business doing this by yourself. And there's so many partners that you have out there that can help execute the plan. So you really do have to understand what your limitations are, what your assets are that you can leverage, and create a plan that can accommodate the capacity that you have within your own agency, you know, the technical expertise that you have amongst the staff, and making sure that you have the budget in which to execute that plan. I see lots of plans sit on the shelves because there's not the political will to move forward, and there's no money in the budget in order to make it happen. So your plan needs to fit with what you are and what you have to work with.
Very interesting. Good comments about what some of the communities want to think about as they look at doing a strategic plan and making sure they have the resources to implement it after it's been completed. What do you see coming down the road for economic development and real estate development? We've gone through a thing called a pandemic, and we're still trying to figure out which way is up. Where do you see things today, and where do you see things headed?
Yeah. So, Dean, it depends on the asset class and whether it's an urban versus a rural or a suburban location. You know, industrial is the hot ticket today in some of the non-gateway cities. How we shop, you know, is driving the demand for warehouse space. And so you're seeing a lot of communities that have proximity to interstate freeways, proximity to major markets, becoming the darling location for the Amazons of the world. Office space is really not dead, but maybe just on a temporary break. You know, work from home may be short-lived as more people still want that in-person experience. You know, we found that those that have been hit the hardest are the Gen Z and millennials. They really do miss the coaching and the mentoring that they can't get via a Zoom chat or a Zoom call or a Zoom meeting. And so there's going to be a transformation in office space, but it won't disappear. You know, space utilization might change from, you know, assigned desks to unassigned desks. You know, more space per employee and more collaboration space or learning space or amenity space. And these are the kinds of things that tenants are desiring and that landlords are looking at, you know, how to make that office space safer for them to come back to work, and how to work, stand up an office that works today for how people work. You know, retail is interesting. You know, everyone thinks that retail is going away, but it really, really isn't. You know, retail that does provide that experience you can't get through online shopping is still going to thrive. And what we found is that omni-channel marketing and fulfillment is the way to go. You know, people buy online and then pick up at the store. And retailers that have stand up that type of model are doing okay today. Where we're heading? Well, we're coming out of that medically induced coma brought on by COVID.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and there's a tremendous amount of savings and pent-up demand. And so people are going to be out there, you know, what we call revenge spending. Mm. And, you know, obviously that's going to drive up, you know, retail demand, whether it's online or in-person shopping. But a lot of people want to get out there and hit the streets. I can't begin to tell you how excited I was to be able to go to a shopping center again without a mask and to enjoy my day. The other thing I think that's going to happen is the reskilling of the workforce that for those that want to change careers. We seem to be experiencing a workforce shortage in certain segments of the market. I think the hospitality industry has probably been hit relatively hard, and they're finding a hard time to get people to come back to work. And in some cases, some folks have just decided it's time to hang up the shingle and retire. Mm-hmm. In other cases, it's women that have shared the child-rearing responsibility that just are not ready to come back to work because the kids aren't necessarily back in school. And in other cases, it's people that are just disenchanted with the job that they have, and they want to do something different. They want something that's just a little bit more secure. So you're going to see a lot of that reskilling the workforce for those folks that do want to experience a career change.
Do you see talent attraction and workforce development becoming an increasing concern for companies as they look for locations to expand?
You know, I think it depends on the location. It depends on the company and the type of work that they do. But by and large, if companies, you know, in the manufacturing setting, it's not feasible, you know, to have a hybrid kind of workplace mm-hmm. where some are working from home and some are in the manufacturing shop floor. So they're a little bit different. And so I think that they need to find a way to make their facilities safe. So that their workforce understands that, you know, when they come to work, that there's cleaning stations, that there's some social distancing, and that there's, you know, the attention to the health, their health, and that the company, you know, feels that that's an important thing to keep them safe. When you talk about office and retail, it's a little bit different. Office in particular might, you know, go to the hybrid approach. I guess every office is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I think the cards are not all on the table yet, so it's really hard for everybody to understand, you know, is this work from home, you know, going to be the model for the future going forward? Will it be a hybrid approach, or are we going to, you know, go happily back to the office to work? And, of course, retail is, you know, I found that just going to the store, there seems to be a real shortage of salespeople. Mm-hmm. And so, again, are they just not interested in coming back, or do they not feel safe coming back? And so, you know, I guess it's going to depend, Dean, a lot on, you know, the office, the sector that you're looking at, and what the future holds for the workforce.
Well, I've heard it said that, you know, the extra $300 on the unemployment has kept people out of the workforce. But I noticed where Texas has decided not to accept the other $300, but it still has not yet to increase any hiring that's been able to happen as a result of cutting off the extra compensation on the unemployment insurance payments to people. I wonder if that's maybe the issue is deeper than we think.
Yeah, it could be. Again, going back to what I said earlier, you know, there's a multitude of reasons why people are not coming back to work. And, you know, unemployment benefits being one of those many reasons. But mm-hmm. again, people are reevaluating their job and their careers. And some of them just don't want to go back into that retail or hospitality environment. They're interested in moving on into something else. Others, such as the boomers, have finally basically said, look, I've enjoyed my time not having to go to work, and, you know, I don't want to go back. I'm ready to retire and enjoy the rest of my life. And, again, you know, women in particular mm-hmm. have left the workforce in droves. And what is it going to take to get women back? Well, you know, are their children back in school? Are they safe going back to school?
Or,
and so, you
or
know,
daycare,
that's,
you know, providing
or
daycare.
Or daycare.
I mean,
exactly.
If you do the math on the daycare side of things, you know, it might be break even for people that have two or three kids.
Yeah, and exactly.
If it's break even, I might as well just stay home. It's like, and oh, by the way, I'm kind of enjoying staying home. And so it's like, I think we've benefited from COVID, which sounds kind of like a weird thing to say, mm-hmm. But I think there has been a kind of a reevaluation of how we live our lives. And I think it's been a healthy step back and take time and pause and look. I know in my case, my relationship with my wife is deeper now than it's ever been. And we've been together 25 years, you know. So yeah. it was a cool time, you know, but we were spending a lot of time together, and we didn't kill each other. So, hey, you know, it all works out.
Yeah.
What do you see coming down the road for economic development now? What's up ahead as we kind of peer through your crystal ball and real estate development, too? What's going on in those areas?
Yeah, you know, Dean, I still think there's a greater focus on collaboration and community outreach. You know, I think COVID was a great teacher and showed how effective we can be in engaging our local business. You know, it's an interesting how, you know, everyone thought Main Street was going to be dead, but yet we went out and worked with those local businesses. We modified our codes. We allowed, you know, outdoor dining. Maybe close traffic on certain streets to make that happen. There were a whole lot of things that we did, and I think it's important to learn from that experience and carry it forward when working with your partners in your local business. There's a lot that we can do if we just maybe get out of our own way and stop worrying about where credit lies and just work collaboratively with your partners to make things happen. And so another thing I think, you know, is an opportunity for the future for those in economic development is really to engage thought leaders in the various sectors, industrial, office, and retail, you know, to better understand what is trending, what is dying, and how your community or region can stay relevant, because it's the economics that are going to drive whatever happens. And you want to be on the cutting edge and not on the tail end of what's going on. And so just by engaging those thought leaders to have a better understanding of what is happening, what's coming down the road, and how you can position your community or your region to take advantage of that, I think that that's, you know, in terms of opportunities for the future, you know, it'll really help you stay relevant.
I think the whole issue around supply chain kind of brought some of that home to us, as well as we've seen the supply chains be disrupted. And then, you know, we had one local company that, while they could get their supplies, their customers couldn't buy their product because they couldn't ship because they didn't have the capability to receive it. And so it got to be a kind of an unusual supply chain issue for them. And I think what I also have seen out there is, and maybe you have too, that the communities are stepping in and looking at supply chains and looking at where the gaps are and looking what opportunities those might create for recruiting companies to fill those gaps. Have you seen that in your work?
It's starting to happen now, and depending upon the sector, some of those strategies may be more successful than others. What we're finding is that, you know, offshoring that supply chain in some cases is just not practical for them to bring it back. In other cases, it is. And I also see, you know, not just, you know, attracting the supply chain, but there's runway for entrepreneurship here. You know, standing up some of your own business that can fill in those gaps and provide that product or service that is needed, you know, in terms of that supply chain. So really understanding your market, not just your community, but your region, and what that industry is and who their suppliers are, will put you in a better position to really understand how you can stand up that supply chain locally to service the region.
You mentioned a couple things earlier about collaboration and the ability to work together. I'm wondering, and also you mentioned the need to have the resources to implement a strategy. Do you see an increase in regionalism and in that collaboration happening?
I think that's, you know, it's been happening for the last 30 years. I've seen an increase in regionalism. I still think that local economic development is where the actual, you know, put the stake in the ground happens, and that at the regional level, it's important to kind of coalesce the resources, get that brand identity out there, really shake the bushes and understand what your industries are and what you can attract. But the real deal happens at the local level. Everybody knows that. So you can't abandon your local efforts and with the hopes that all going to be at the regional level. So you still, you know, it's that, it, you know, it's our economic development supply chain, if you will. Mm-hmm. You still have to have that foundation that can take advantage of whatever work that regional organization is doing for you.
Very good point. And that's where you see this idea of a partnership. You know, mm-hmm. I just think of some organizations like the Greater Richmond Partnership, you know, where you have a large marketing arm doing the marketing piece and the awareness part and also the lead generation piece. But as you said, the local EDOs are the ones that are actually working the deals and making them happen. And so it's just interesting to see that two layers, at least, maybe there's three layers of economic development organizations that are working together. An old basketball coach and community leader told me one time, he said, collaboration is what happens when competition fails.
There you go.
And so I think we've gotten to the collaboration. We've tried the competition part, and now we're going to try the collaboration piece. So
exactly.
And then I was also kind of wondering, what are some of the opportunities you see in the future for your organization, your company, in real estate development and economic? What do you see happening in that category?
Well, you know, the work that we do in economic development is all on the pre-development planning side. We don't do any transactional real estate work or physical development, so it's strictly on the consulting side. And so what we're seeing is that there is a greater desire on the part of communities for mixed-use development. Hmm. And so oftentimes those require various kinds of market studies or impact analysis work in order to, you know, move the needle for whatever rezoning needs to take place or whatever collaboration that you have to have with that development partner. So you're seeing more of those mixed-use developments because it seems like when you stand up a really good mixed-use development, it's the place where workers want to be. And as a result of that, it's the place where the employers want to locate because it's, you know, if it's the cool place to work, because it's walkable, because it's got the amenities that are desired by the workforce, it's got the restaurants, it's got the entertainment. And, oh, by the way, I can live right here, walk out my door, get to work, and in the evening I can go to the bar with my friends. So you're seeing a lot more focus on mixed-use developments in communities today. And so from my standpoint, there's an opportunity to continue to work, you know, with the development community as well as, you know, the public sector. And helping them understand what the land economics are for those types of developments, what square footage of space can be supported in various sectors, and then what are some of the strategies that we need to put into place in order to make it happen.
I'm just trying to get my arms around the idea of a pre-planning consulting service. So it's like, okay, you're ahead of the development's plan, I think, is what I hear. And then it's really looking at what are the mistakes we want to avoid. is that fair?
You know, I think that oftentimes a community has a desire to have a certain kind of business in their marketplace, and so they set up about, you know, trying to attract that without an understanding of, can the market even support it? Do we have what it takes to be successful? What systems or things do we need to put into place in order, you know, for that first step to be successful? And so, you know, that's where we kind of come in. We come in and help evaluate the market, help perhaps identify particular locations that make the most sense for that type of business, look at what the resources are that they have available to them, identify potential users that they could possibly, you know, attract, or developers that they could bring in to help, you know, partner with them in terms of a public-private partnership. And so, you know, it's all on that pre-development side where you're doing plans and studies, evaluations and assessments before any, you know, shovel hits the dirt.
Yeah, I understand. That's a very cool thing that you're doing, and I think it's quite a valuable service that you're offering to communities, particularly the feasibility part. It looks to me like a lot of communities reach out there with a dream, not knowing whether or not there's even a market for their dream. And so I think you save them and also help them achieve that dream too by being better informed as they go forward with their idea of what they want to accomplish. And all that, I assume, gets built into your strategy planning piece of your business then. Is that correct?
It absolutely does. You know, again, going back to why do some plans fail and why are some plans successful, it all has to do with the market, the feasibility of what you're trying to do, the economics of the market, whether you have those key assets that are needed in order to propel that strategy forward. And that's where strategic planning is interesting. It's not enough just to have a strategic plan. You have to have one that fits your economy, your market, your capacity in terms of staff and financial resources. Working with the private development community is always important because, after all, they're the ones that are building the space. And as you and I both know, Dean, most users are lessees. They don't own their buildings.
Correct.
They don't tie up their capital in real estate. They use that for operating, for, you know, expanding. So, you know, in order, you know, we go back to, you know, shovel-ready sites, existing buildings. You know, if you don't have existing buildings, then you need to work with your development community to find out how you can possibly get some spec space done, and what are the barriers to making that happen, and trying to understand how you might be able to reduce some of those barriers to the private sector.
Do you see some, well, speaking of private sector, do you see private equity money coming into the market stronger now than it has in the past? Or?
Yeah, you know, it depends on the market. Mm-hmm. Again, it depends on that asset class. So, you know, retail probably is, you know, still waiting to see what's going to shake out there. Industrial, there's certainly money in the market for that type of space. And so you're seeing a lot of that space, you know, being developed. And then office, everybody's still waiting to see what's going to happen. What they are experiencing is, you know, a flight from the urban center to the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're seeing that the barrier to entry at the suburbs is certainly less. It's not as costly to build a building in a suburban market than it is in an urban downtown setting. And you're seeing that the workforce is very interested in working in an environment that they don't have to ride public transit to work. They don't have to ride up the elevator. You know, so you're seeing some of this suburban market excel by attracting those kinds of office users. And so you're seeing the money follow that.
Very
so it depends on the sector. It depends on the part of the country.
I'd like to kind of wrap up with a question, which is a broad one, but we've talked a lot about changes going on in and around economic development and real estate. What can our listeners do to kind of stay relevant in this rapidly changing world? How can they stay relevant?
Well, they need to continue to engage with their economic development partners to understand what's changing and how that's going to impact or affect their community efforts, their local economic development efforts. They should always take advantage of whatever continuing education or training is out there that they can, you know, to either fill some of the gaps. If they're weak on financing, maybe take financing classes. If they're not understanding, you know, social media and how to utilize that, take some classes, take some training. You know, so take advantage of whatever they can in order to keep their skill set sharp. And then apply what they learn, you know, and you know, after taking the class, make sure that they apply what they learn. And then lastly, you know, stay nimble because the world is ever changing and you don't want to get stuck in a rut. And mm-hmm. This is the way we've always done things. This is the way we're going to continue to do things because your competition isn't standing still.
Yeah.
So that would be my advice.
And I think the International Economic Development Council, of which you've been chairwoman of at one point, has a number of courses that they're now offering across a broad range of topics, including entrepreneurship, which I thought was interesting. And do you see other needs out there for specific kinds of training?
Yeah, you know, it depends on goes back to your market and what you have to work with. If you're looking at, you know, adaptive reuse and infill,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's important to understand, you know, the whole real estate development process.
Yep.
So that you get a better understanding of what those steps are and what you can do in order to facilitate that happening in your community, what recommendations you can make for rezoning modifications or building code modifications to allow for certain type of development to go forward. So, it, you know, depending, again, on your market, if it's if you're a small rural community and you're resourced, you have a resource-based economy, and tourism is what you're all about, then understand what's happening in the hospitality industry and what you can do in order to become what your brand is that you could put out there, and what you can do in order to attract more visitation to your marketplace.
Judy, thank you for sharing your thoughts today. You've given us a lot to think about, for sure. And I really appreciate you taking the time to give us a glimpse of what you're kind of seeing coming up around the corner. So thank you so much for your willingness to allow us to have this interview today. And I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you, Dean. It's been my pleasure. I enjoyed talking to you as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report podcast, Seeing Around Corners, and a special thanks to Judy Scalise for helping us better understand the rapid changes taking place in economic development and the commercial and residential real estate. Again, I'm Dean Whitaker, your host. Thank you for listening.